Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 17th. I'm Ray Graff. It's time once again to talk car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, towing, and used car place. We welcome your car calls now at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Gordon is a popular guest, so I advise calling now. Get in the queue early, 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke and your automotive calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's that time again. It's time to talk cars with Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. He was trained in Wolfsburg, if you know what I mean. Gordon is an expert on foreign cars and American cars and a great guest on this program. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Oh, it's pothole season, Gordon.
Yes, it is, and there's a lot of them out there. I've been down this way a couple times recently. I took a few vehicles to the port for for scrap metal.
Yeah.
And in my transporter truck, the ride is horrendous, and every one of those bumps just smashes right through the frame.
Isn't it fun? And, you know, the road crews have enough to do, and they can only keep up with so much, but it can do a lot of damage to your car if you hit it right.
It does. It wears out some stuff, tires, wheels, suspension, springs, all kinds of things.
It's good stuff. Now, I got an email. I got an email this morning or late last night from Diane. And Diane said, I've heard you mention your fondness for your 1965 Le Mans of old. And she sent some pictures. She says, this was my husband Dan's project car. He was in search of one owner, preferably someone's grandmother, low mileage and decent shape. Out of nowhere in 99, there was a car in Want Ad Digest. He called and I heard him say, it was your grandmother's car. And so he bought it and restored it. And I showed you the picture
yes.
here. And it was in decent shape to begin with. And then look at that.
Yeah. Well, both pictures are great. I'd take the first one.
So she says it won multiple trophies over time.
Do you think this is your old car?
No way. No way. Because it wasn't his grandmother, or, you know, it wasn't the seller's grandmother's. It was mine. But Diane says her husband's looking for another project car, but it has to be, she says, half the length of the Le Mans.
Half the length?
I don't think so.
It's about a normal size car in today's world, right?
I suggested a 61 Eldorado.
That's not half the length of that.
No,
that's longer.
Blowing that off, man. Yeah. No. 63 Chrysler Imperial Crown convertible.
So our neighbors growing up in East Hoosick was a Chrysler dealer. Chrysler and Dodge or Plymouth, I'm not sure. But so my friend Jeff, who lives in Arizona now, his grandmother had a 63 maybe Imperial Crown with the pod headlights. The headlights were like standing up. They weren't built into the nose of the car.
Yeah.
And then his mother also drove a later one, I think a 65 Imperial. And so I'd see these Imperials drive by our house all the time.
What a grand car. And the first time I ever was experiencing that car, or at least seeing it, was in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Yes.
And Milton Berle and Ethel Merman are driving around in that thing.
What a great movie for laughs and cars and machinery and planes and everything, you know?
Yeah, and the last one I thought that Dan could rehab is a 65 Lincoln Continental. Always loved that car. Talk about a car you could walk around in.
65. Did that have the doors that opened? Did that have suicide doors?
I don't know.
There was a Lincoln of that era that had, quote, suicide doors.
Yeah, I know
doors.
What you're saying. They opened the other way.
Yeah, yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Had a funny email here, and I know you like to do What Would Roger Think? And this is an email from, doesn't say. Dashboards on cars are becoming so complex, requiring the driver to take their eyes off the road much more than they should. With my old 2007 Toyota RAV4, it was easy to adjust the heat without looking, a knob for the air direction, another for temperature, another for fan speed. Now everything I want to change, anything I have to take my eyes off the road to find the right button to push. Are there any car manufacturers that have realized all this extra stuff is not safe and therefore they're going back to the basics? I'm getting ready to buy a new car. I want a decent car with safety features, but I don't need or want a big screen and electronic features. Are there any new cars out there like this?
It would have to be a very, very entry-level, low introductory car. And screens are, of course, everywhere, and they're actually less money. Yeah. You're thinking you're getting a high-end, a luxury car item, and the screens are actually cheaper to produce. They make them for everything. But yes, they are integrating everything into the screen.
I don't like it.
My daughter Emma just got a Volkswagen Atlas, and I remember talking to the salesman saying that they have integrated everything into the screen. No knobs, no buttons, no dials, no nothing. And I think, and I agree with the emailer, that it is more distracting because you've got to look at the screen and make decisions and touch it to turn up the radio, turn up the heat, turn the heated seats on. Which then brings us to, what would Roger think?
And you have a great one for this. And you really, I am shocked at what you told me before the
show. Yes. So, and I learned about this some time ago. BMW did a little, they said afterwards that it was a test program where they were selling vehicles that were loaded with accessories.
Yeah.
Heated seats, heated steering wheel, navigation, all kinds of extras. And all of those extras were sold on a trial basis. And after a period of time expired, those options went away. The owner of the car would then have to subscribe to BMW and pay a subscription to select those options. In other words, you want heated seats that you just enjoyed for the first 3 months? Now you're paying for the use of those heated seats. You like the heated steering wheel? That's another add-on. You like navigation and searching for gas stations and traffic light data? Pay.
Other than a naked money grab, is there any justification that the manufacturer can give for making you pay for something you already bought?
I'm sure they could spend 10 minutes explaining to you in jibber-jabber why you're paying for it, but you're right. It's a money grab. And I agree with those consumers. This car was manufactured with the heated seat elements installed, the wiring, the switch, everything that required the heated seat to work except the unlocking feature in the computer.
Ridiculous.
You could I suppose a hacker could go in there and unlock that stuff.
So this was years ago. They don't do it anymore?
Yes, they do. It wasn't that long ago. And now you're seeing that subscription being snuck into almost all cars now. And BMW got so much heat for it, but now I think I learned or saw on YouTube or somewhere that the system's going, and this isn't new. I mean, GM started it with satellite OnStar.
Oh yeah, that goes way back.
Way back, and OnStar was whatever cars it was included in, you got a free trial run with it. And then it expired. And they said, hey, if you liked what you had here with this satellite service, you have to pay a subscription. Unlock the car remotely was part of it. You know, if you locked your keys out in your car at the grocery store, you could get on your phone and have the satellite system unlock your car for you. But you're paying.
Well, I can sort of see that.
Heated
seats? No. I mean, the mechanism's already there.
That was the big beef. The hardware is installed and you bought it. You own the elements, you own the wiring, you own the seats, but you can't turn them on.
Ouch. All right, this email from Gene. We'll do an email or two and then we'll take a break and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke's our guest. Gene wrote in early this morning. Is there a Subaru seatbelt chimes, oy vey, is the subject heading. Is there a way to shut off the ding, 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 ding?
No. There was years ago because they were a little relay with a speaker in it that was nothing but a buzzer.
Yeah.
And you could just unplug the buzzer.
Right.
Not anymore.
That's appalling. Just on a personal note, my caddy after the, it went 2011, something like that, after the blizzard and then the sub-zero for weeks and weeks, my car had this issue with a sensor. Something got iced up, and it was stability track sensor or something. And when the light goes off, it reduces your engine power.
Yeah.
So I'm putt-putting along like I'm in a horse and wagon. I had to start clearing the codes as I was driving. Is there a way to disable that?
No, not really. I mean, again, you go back far enough, you could pull a fuse and take the ABS system offline. And the warning lights would stay lit all the time, but you didn't lose power, but you lost your anti-lock braking capability. But there was a period of time where a lot of vehicles, and I remember this happening with GM pickup trucks like crazy, the sensors would semi-fail. They would just start to get tired, and the ABS would come on unnecessarily.
Ooh.
The computer thought you had wheels locking, and you didn't.
Yeah.
So it took the brakes away. And I had a gentleman that had a Chevy pickup, and it was starting to happen. And I told him what the cause was going to be, and he didn't want to fix it. It needed a wheel bearing, maybe two, I don't remember. He came in one day, he said, I think we got to get that truck in and get those wheel bearings done. I said, why? He said, I went through the intersection the other day and did a little bit of damage, but nothing bad.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
There you go.
Yeah. And mine went away. Once the warm weather came and we had that warm snap, it's fine now.
So you got a summer car.
Yeah. Well, I think that, no, I think it was just some ice or something lodged in from all that snow that finally cleared out. All right, one more email, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll go to the phones. Gordon Fricke's our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Ozzy writes in, 2016 Explorer, 3.5-liter engine, 90,000 miles. It has internal water pump, which costs about $3,000 to replace. Per your experience, what's the average mileage when the pump starts to leak? I'm thinking of trading it in.
Yeah, I don't know, but that is a... There's another one going back to what would Roger think. We may have mentioned this once before, but Ford built this engine with the water pump internal to the engine. Now, most water pumps are all on the outside.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can even see them. There's a pulley and a belt that turns the water pump,
right,
and it's bolted to the face of the engine, the front of the engine. This pump got buried behind the timing cover, behind the timing chain, in the oil. So
in the oil.
Yeah. So water pumps always fail sooner or later. Now, maybe there are some water pumps that last the entire life of the car, but it's an item that's going to probably fail.
Mm-hmm.
They start to leak coolant. The coolant can't dribble out of the vehicle onto the ground. It goes into the engine oil, turns the oil into a milkshake, wipes out the bearings, and you just lost your engine. And the dealer says it'll be $20,000.
Yikes.
I, you know, maybe a little bit of studying would give this emailer the average time that you can expect it to happen. It may never happen, though. I don't want to be a pessimist and say they're all going to fail.
Right.
But I have towed them in that very condition, and it doesn't make the owner very happy.
It's 90,000 miles, so it's something's going to happen soon enough.
Maybe.
All right, let's take a break. Gordon Fricke's our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. Cars Today. We'll get to the calls in a moment. So, you know, every now and again, I have to truck my carcass out for these live events. And we got a good one coming up April 22nd. It's Earth Day, and we'll be at the Landis Arboretum for a Vox Pop on the Road gardening show. We'll have Fred Breglia from the Landis, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, all there to answer your questions. You can be in the audience. We're going to record this and air it live, I believe, on Memorial Day. The event itself is Earth Day, April 22nd at 2 p.m. Love to have you there. You can find out more at wamc.org/on the road. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Our guest today is Gordon Fricke, and let's hit the phones. Paul is in Albany. Paul, you're on.
Hi. I don't expect, being a lifelong Mets fan like Ray and I don't expect you're going to be able to answer this question, Gordon, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway. We've had a Toyota RAV4 Prime for a few years. And it has this feature where you press a button, like if you're out of electricity, you press a button to generate more electricity. And our question is, so is that tends to use up more fuel, I would think. The gas engine runs louder.
Right.
Is there any sense to that? There's a reason they put it in there. I think the Prius has that also. So do you know anything about this?
Well, I think it's the prevention of being stranded. The fear of full EVs is range anxiety. If I run out of power, if I run out of electricity and I'm 100 miles away from anywhere, I'm done, where this car can keep going because it has an onboard generator.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're burning gasoline and, you know, whatever the equation is of the gas consumption to the miles that you can drive on it, but certainly aren't harming anything by using that feature.
So it's not really, it's really only if, I mean, yes, if you're running out of gas, that's what you're saying. So if you think you're going to run out of gas, then you press that button to generate more electricity. Is that it? I mean, is there any reason otherwise to use that button?
You mean to use it consistently?
No, I guess once we've run out of electricity, like we take a drive to my wife's family's house, which is an hour 20-minute drive down I-88, and the gas comes on about 2/3 of the way through. We have a 42-mile range, so you can go
42 miles on battery
all electric. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's why we got the car. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, well, so if people have short commutes, they can do the whole thing.
Yeah.
On electricity, and yours is a plug-in, correct?
Yeah, plug-in hybrid. Yeah, so, yeah, you know, yeah. we've heard that it's advantageous to use this generator thing to add more electricity, but it sounds like what you're saying is if we're worried about running out of gas, too.
No, I don't think there's any concern of running out of gasoline unless your tank's way empty. But basically, right. that's a range extender.
Yeah.
A lot of the newer electric vehicles, because of that range anxiety concern, they're calling them range extenders. What they are, they're a gasoline-powered engine running a generator in the vehicle somewhere, so you can just keep going, and that's what it is. It's a generator. So you're running an engine to make electricity to power the vehicle, which is how train locomotives operate. They have giant diesel engines that generate electricity that run electric motors that turn the wheels of the train.
There you go.
So it's nothing new.
Paul, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Another Paul is in Sharon Springs. Paul, you're on.
Hi. It's always great when Gordon's on. You have a large listening audience.
Nice.
A mistake I'm seeing constantly, people driving up to the gas island, filling their tanks, and when the trigger goes off, saying you're done filling, they continue to fill, trying to squeeze in another dollar or $2 before the gas price goes up 50 more cents tomorrow. And that's bad. There has to be a airspace, headspace in that fuel tank for the EVAP system to work. And if that system can't remove those gases, it's going to trigger their onboard computer, your check engine lights go to come on, and you're going to say, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Sometimes the computer, the check engine light will clear. Sometimes it won't. And it can be very costly to get that EVAP system fixed.
Yes. And you'd have to try hard to overload it. But I guess some people might just keep clicking it and clicking it and clicking it until it just runs out of the filler neck. And I think that goes back to maybe, you know, the gas crisis in the 70s.
Sure.
You know, when gas went out of the completely off the rails with gas lines. So people said, I've got to put every drop I can in here. And those cars didn't have the systems these cars today do. But if you're pumping in it and it clicks off and you hit it one more time, no harm done. If you keep clicking it forever, you potentially could flood the canister. So that it is correct. I think you got to try hard to really hammer that much extra fuel in there.
Paul, thanks a lot for the call. It's Gordon Fricke today. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Cars today. And let's go up to beautiful Plattsburgh, New York. Jim, you're on.
Hey, Ray and Gordon, thanks for taking the call. Really, really appreciate the time that I'm going to be able to spend with you.
Sure.
1965, Lincoln Continental, sitting in my driveway, Ray.
Yes, yes.
Just talking about that.
Yeah, I heard it, so I called in. I just couldn't stand. You guys got to know, it is suicide doors.
All right.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not running. It's not running. I had it towed from a barn here in Plattsburgh. It's sitting in the driveway. I did the master cylinder, the front brakes, the rear brakes, got them all tightened up. Doesn't start yet. I figure I can't stop it. Why would I start it? When we took it off the flatbed, it would not roll backwards. I couldn't understand why. Took it apart enough to figure out the drive shaft off the rear end, still stuck, won't roll backwards at all.
Hmm.
I can't figure out why. It is posi traction. When I had it in the air, I could spin one wheel forward, the other side would go backwards.
But
when you put them back down on the ground, it'll roll forward, but it won't roll backwards.
So does it give you resistance rolling forward? I know it's a big, heavy car.
No, it rolls freely.
It does. But as soon as you start to go backwards, does it immediately feel like it's locking?
Oh, it won't budge.
Yeah.
Right? Had the brakes all the way off of it, emergency brakes off, everything. Can't get those wheels to spin backwards.
So So cars of that era, and I don't know what Lincoln or Ford, parent company or at that time already, has for an automatic transmission, but there could be a rear pump in that transmission that could be creating that binding because it's been sitting there in a barn for so many years.
50 years, yep.
I would investigate what's in that transmission, and particularly in the tail of it, and see if there is if that transmission had a rear pump. They all have front pumps, and the old ones had also rear pumps to pump to make fluid. And I'm wondering if it does, if there's something interfering with that rear pump causing it to not want to move in reverse direction, because it can't be in the drive shaft because you can push the car forward all you want,
right?
Correct. Yeah. And you've totally isolated a brake drag or a brake grab.
Okay.
Is that right?
Okay.
It is not a braking situation.
It is not a braking situation.
Yeah.
No, I've had them all off.
Yeah. It's in the transmission for sure.
Jim, this is so exciting. Are you going to get this thing on the road at some point?
Well, Ray, this is why I called, is because I want to put that thing on the Taconic Parkway. It was meant to run the Taconic, right?
Yeah, buddy.
Isn't that thing built for the Taconic?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. In fact, the Northway, you just better watch your speed, my friend, once you get going.
That's a turnpike cruiser.
Yes, indeed it is.
Yeah.
Hey,
well,
good.
I would be happy to take you to a Mets game if I can get it on the road.
Jeez, man. Well, keep us posted and send some pictures, and thanks for the call.
Yeah, good luck with that project. That's great.
65 Continental. Yes. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke's our guest. Yeah, we'll do a couple more calls, a few more until the next break, and then we'll check the email bag. Looks like it's Glenville time. Rick, you're on. Hello, Rick.
Talk to you. I've been somewhat disturbed this winter when I started my it's an 08 Civic automatic tranny, 140,000, and very cold day, and heard what sounded like a rod knock.
Mm.
I haven't done anything with it, but I'm wondering if it's just the bearings at the farthest distance from the pump, or if it may have some buildup. I do Mobil 1 with OEM filter every 5,000, so I'm pretty meticulous about keeping things in good shape. But I just want to get a sense of whether I might have a blocked path there, and should I do an oil cleaning?
So are you driving the car now, or is the noise so bad you don't dare do anything with it?
It goes away once it warms up, but if there's a possibility that there may be some starvation to that bearing. I have other vehicles I can drive, so I've avoided driving it I'm considering whether to try a treatment or something of that sort.
So any flickering oil light at idle when the engine's at full operating temperature?
No, never seen any low pressure indications.
So there are other reasons you can get knocking noises. How many miles did you say were on that?
140.
Yeah, I mean, that's not insane for a Honda.
No.
And the oil, you've changed the oil very regularly by the sounds of things.
Yes, Mobil 1 with OEM filter every 5K.
What's nice to know is the engine's oil pressure, and you need equipment for that. You either tap into where the oil sensor screws in, or there's a device that takes the place of the oil filter. And if that oil pressure is perfect, it's excellent, it may not be, because if you had a spun, and not so much a spun, if you had a very badly worn bearing or two or all of them, it would show up in the oil pressure.
Mm.
If it was a spun bearing, the bearing would cover up the oil hole, and you'd have oil pressure, but you'd be squealing that bearing out very quickly, and you wouldn't be driving that car for more than 5 minutes. So I don't think that happened.
Right.
There are knocking noises that occur from carbon deposits that build up on the cylinder head, and sometimes a piece of carbon falls down on the piston, and the piston smacks it into the cylinder head for quite a while. And that is a little difficult to determine unless you have a scope where you can go down in the cylinder and look around and see if...
I do have a scope.
You do. I would... So, in the olden days...
But would that be consistent with the fact that it goes away once the oil starts to warm?
And is it completely gone when you warm up?
Completely gone once it gets past that frigid oil.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is also you could be mistaking that for... And that car there, I think, has hydraulic lifters, but it could be lifter noise.
No. In fact, I adjusted the valves a while back.
So it is manual valves. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's going to require more testing. Isolate the cylinder that's making the noise. You certainly, if you have a scope, look in those cylinders, see if there's anything going on in there.
Rick, thank you very much. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. If you have a question about your wheels, let's take one more, then we'll take a break, then we'll hit the email bag, and then go back to the phones. Fred is in Ware, Massachusetts. Fred, you're on.
Hey there, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. So I've got a 2012 Toyota Sienna, and it's got the power slider doors on the left and right and the power tailgate. Problem is the driver's side slider door only sort of works. So when I try to open it, it fights against me. It's defective, basically, and it's something like $2,000 parts and labor to fix it. So I don't want to fix it. I can fix the problem temporarily by just there's a power switch that shuts off both sliders and the tailgate, but then I lose the ability to use the other two. So is there some way to disable only that one slider? Is there some, like, something I can cut? Or, I mean, there's like a chain at the bottom that opens and closes it. But when I try to do it manually without shutting off the whole thing, it's fighting against me. And once I shut the switch off, I can open and close that left door easily.
Yeah.
So is there some way to disable only that one door?
So Toyota had a lot of trouble with those sliding doors back in those days, and they extended the warranty. They issued bulletins. They covered lots and lots of repairs.
Yeah.
By now, I think it's beyond all that, being a 2012 vehicle.
They
were cable operated, I believe. And
yeah, it's got a chain or a cable or something along the bottom.
I think it's cable. And Honda Odysseys were in the same boat. And I do remember years ago, I thought we would eliminate the cable on that affected door. And I think the door then could be used manually.
Hmm.
I would look into that, maybe get some diagrams of how the system works, but I think that's what we used to get them coming in with the cable basically hanging out of the door. So the damage was done. We would just snip the cable out, and you could at that point you could use the door manually. So I would look into that.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'll try that. You know, I can't do too much damage. It's already not working. So,
right.
All right, thank you.
Get a manual and see what makes that thing tick, and then just be sure you're not cutting out the wrong stuff.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. Fred, thanks for the call. We'll take a break here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Email bag next, and then phones. The night has a thousand eyes. There's Joe Pass here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. If you have a car question for Gordon Fricke, 1-800-348-2551. Let's do some emails here. This one's from Johanna, who writes, in December of 25, I bought a 2006 Scion XB, my favorite car, 134,000 miles. I bought it in New Jersey from a dealer, Clean Carfax. Was $5,800, 30-day warranty. Drove it home to Dutchess County, passed New York inspection. On March 6th of this year, I took it to my local shop after hearing a rattle. When the mechanic went to lift the vehicle, the frame started collapsing, which led him to look further. Found rear frame rotted, had been stuffed with rags and undercoated over. Repairs now visible. Recommend vehicle not be driven. That's a quote from their service notes. Needless to say, I took it off the road immediately. The dealership website states all inventory passes our detailed inspection to ensure you're driving away with a like-new vehicle. What recourse do I have? How should I phrase my correspondence to them? I'm now safe and sound in a 2020 Forester Sport. It's from Johanna.
Yeah, I would go on New Jersey's. I'm assuming New Jersey has a state inspection program.
You got it. You got to believe it.
Some states don't. So I guess the lemon laws and the inspection regulations for the state should be looked at, and anybody can get those because we're so close to Vermont. We would get some Vermont vehicles in that would pass Vermont state inspection or get fresh stickers on them and have something glaringly wrong.
Yeah.
And I would get sometimes a response, well, the dealership said that that's not part of Vermont's inspection. We're not required.
Uh-huh.
So I said, well, let's see. So I go out on the website, looked on Vermont State Inspection. It was almost identical. So anyway, look at what New Jersey says that a vehicle must have to be sold in that state and or pass its inspection program. And I've got a feeling that corrosion, as far as New York is concerned, you can't have corrosion, perforation, or holes in any suspension attachment points. You can have holes in the frame in the middle of the pickup truck, for example, but where the control arms and the suspension and the springs connect, can't.
Yeah, so it's not, a little not bit safe.
It's a little bit, you got to sort through it. But.
Okay. This one's from Mary. And by the way, if you want to jump in, we'll get back to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke's our guest. Mary in Hudson writes in, I've got a Jeep Compass 2015, which I've taken very good care of to dangle a preposition, says Mary. But my radio turns on every morning to my NPR station. It'll be relatively fine for about a minute. Then it blinks off, then back on when the spirit moves it and so on. Who should I go to tighten whatever loose connection might be the problem? Give me the verbiage as a female so I don't get rooked at the Jeep. Wait a minute. At the dealership. Please, it's frustrating, and that's from Mary.
Tell me the year again. 16, did you say?
2015.
2015. In 15, that radio was completely self-contained, and it's highly unlikely that it's going to be anything other than an internal problem.
You don't think it's a connector?
I doubt it. Does it? She didn't say in that email if it affects the whole radio.
Well, it says it works and then it just turns off and turns on at a whim.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm assuming the whole unit, no matter what station you're on or whatever you've got playing. This is a trick that you could attempt to do. And don't smash it to pieces, but bang on the radio.
That's what I do.
When it fails. I'm serious. Don't really crash it or break it, but
no.
Give it a jar.
Okay.
And just see if that If you hammer on it and bang, it all of a sudden responds. There's something going on inside of it.
Now, if Mary wanted to avoid going to the dealership, which is, you know, the dealership knows what they're doing. But if it's an electronic thing, could she go to an aftermarket car stereo
yes.
place or something like that?
And or her independent repair shop, because I don't think in a 15 Jeep that was a coded component. I don't think that is a module that needs to be introduced to the vehicle. I think you could get a used radio from a salvage yard out of another 15 Jeep or whatever year fits it. They're easy to change.
Aren't they somehow connected to the anti-theft, though?
I don't know on that vehicle.
Okay.
But the shop could check with the salvage yard to say, are there any notes if this is plug and play or does it require coding?
You know, when I've had radio problems in various cars, I've hit the dash and the radio so hard that I'm afraid that I'm going to engage the airbags and get slammed.
So that suggestion of mine was something you do try periodically.
Well, that's basically how I fix things.
Yeah.
Deb writes in, hi there, Gordon. I have a 2020 Nissan Rogue with 60,000 miles on it. When I start it, I hear a clunking sound in the back. I have made sure I do not have anything that is moving, and I only hear it when I start to go in reverse. I'm beyond warranty, but have an insurance plan, so would like your thoughts. Additionally, can you tell me the average life of a battery for a BW hybrid vehicle? I may be shopping and wondered what the general life of an original battery on a hybrid is. Thanks very much, and that's from Depp.
The clunking or clattering could possibly be an exhaust system-related noise. The way the exhaust is hanging back there, there's a bunch of rubber mounts and metal like pegs that are welded to the exhaust system, could have gotten damaged or bent, could have, you're probably to the next one already. Do you know what year that was again? Don't spend too much time on it. If it's old enough, it could have some corrosion issues where the exhaust mounts are weak or one of them's maybe broken.
It only has 60,000 miles, so.
Could be shields around the exhaust system, the heat shields that are all over the place under there. That might be likely what it is.
That sounds like it. John in Western Massachusetts writes, I only recently learned that my 06 Honda CRV has an electronic valve adjustment. Does that procedure begin with a measurement of how the valves are performing? I'm concerned by what sounds like two cylinders with more noise and colder temperatures below 10 degrees. Thanks very much. And that's from John in Western Massachusetts.
So it doesn't have... Go back to the car again. What was it again?
It was an 06 Honda CRV.
Yeah. It does not have electronically adjusting valves. It does have variable valve timing, which is not adjusting the valves like you think to take the noise or the wear away, but it's for efficiency and better performance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's controlled by the computer, and it's using engine oil to move the cams around. There isn't anything you can do for that system unless something goes wrong with it. And they are sensitive to oil changes, meaning don't go too long.
All right. The number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And this one is from David. I have a 2007 Honda Odyssey. If the car sits for more than a day without being driven, the battery runs down. I suspect it's a parasitic power draw, but the minivan is so old, I don't want to fix it unless it's necessary. It starts okay if it only sits overnight, so most days the battery still has enough oomph to start the engine. Question, will the parasitic power draw damage the battery?
Well, if it sits too long and the battery goes dead in sub-zero, yes, the battery can freeze and that'll ruin it. Let's say you don't drive the car for a week. It's 10 below zero. The battery loses its charge completely. It will damage the plates of the battery. First of all, he needs to make sure that the battery is truly good. This could be a battery issue.
Yeah, very much so.
So let's say the battery passes all the tests. It's not very old, and it is too much of a draw. And I've said this on previous shows where, especially during the pandemic where people weren't driving much, this was happening to cars a lot. They were sitting for weeks,
yeah,
days, and they wouldn't start. We were installing onboard battery tenders in the vehicle with the cord kind of like sticking out of the grill.
Yeah.
And you just plug it in like it was an engine heater, and it would keep the battery it would tend to the battery, and the car would start all the time, unless the draw exceeded the capacity of that battery tender.
Right.
That's an easy fix for a car you don't want to put much money into.
John writes in, screens in cars, hate them. What's the last thing you want when driving at night? An obnoxious screen on your dashboard blinding you like another set of headlights.
Yeah, they're not going away. They're only getting bigger and longer.
All right, Adam in Schuylerville writes in, Chrysler Pacifica 2018. I was on the phone and unfortunately had another call. Well, I'm sorry. I have a 2018 Chrysler Pacifica with 140,000 miles. It has been well-maintained. I haven't had any issues with it since purchase until now. When going uphill, the check engine light comes on, and the van struggles significantly to go above 3,000 RPMs. After a short period, the light goes off, and the van goes back to normal. Any insights?
Yeah, so that's a misfire occurring, and I'm sure it's shuttering or shaking the vehicle a little bit. It should get scanned, because there will be evidence in the computer which cylinder or cylinders was creating the misfire, and it could be spark plugs. They get commonly overlooked today because they don't foul and go bad like they did in 1965. And a lot of ignition coils. Those are the two biggest causes, spark plug and coil. Then it branches out into other things like fuel injectors, fuel deposits, things like that.
All right, Kay writes in from Cornwallville, the BMW thing. The other thing BMW got was a way to make money off secondhand used cars. Used to be, if you bought a used car, you got whatever features the car originally had, and the maker got no money. With a subscription, if you buy a used car, you got to buy the subscription. So the car maker makes money on the secondhand market. Ugh, the future is here, and it's subscription-based. And that's from Kay in Cornwallville.
She's 100% right.
All right, this is from, Michael in Latham. And then we'll go back to the phones. Can you talk about lifespan of batteries, calibration, and replacement cost? Well, we talked a little bit about that, but go ahead.
Yeah, and actually, one of those emails asked about what the average life of a hybrid battery was.
Yeah.
And I didn't get there. Originally, they thought they were going to be good for maybe 10 years, and most of them are all exceeding 10 years. Some are going 15. So, you know, everybody was scared, oh, I'm not getting a hybrid. What if the batteries go bad? Well, during the 15-year ownership of a vehicle, you could suffer an engine or a transmission failure and cost you double what the batteries cost.
I suppose.
You know, the engines today are 20 grand on some vehicles.
Yeah.
But the starting battery, the 12-volt battery that sits under the hood, 5 to 7 years. Seven's okay. High. I'd say three to five is what Interstate says.
In the Northeast, where we get a lot of cold weather, does that shorten that life?
You know, it's interesting you say that. Severe hot spells are harder on batteries.
Interesting.
Than cold spells.
Okay.
Yep.
One more email here, and then we're going to jump back to the phones. Linda writes in, my owner's manual for my 2025 Chevy Trax says to use top-tier gas, which I think is just a detergent gas. Is that really necessary? And that's from Linda.
Very, very necessary in today's world more than ever. And there's a lot of talk about top-tier gasoline, and it is a requirement to achieve top-tier. The gas company or manufacturer has to pass these detergent minimums.
Okay.
And Chevron pretty much wrote the book on it. They developed the chemical called Tecron, or the additive that is in just about everybody's fuel to keep the deposits down.
Mm-hmm.
And the cheaper the brand gets, or the gasoline price gets, and the no-name station becomes, they drop out of tier one, and they're using very little detergents, and the deposits are accumulating so fast that you can start having big problems in 5,000, 6,000, 8,000 miles.
But if you were going to the cheap gas stations, couldn't you just buy the Tecron or equivalent and put it in the tank every few thousand miles?
When you buy the Tecron, you're getting the same detergent that they are mixing in at the refinery.
Yeah.
Or I shouldn't say the refinery, the place that they turn the gas into, whatever, Chevron or Mobil or whatever you want to sell it as.
Gordon Fricke's our guest. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Dan is in Fuhrer Busch. Dan, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I've got a 2004 Toyota Avalon. I bought it new, and I love the car. I've had two Avalons, but this one, the last 3 years, it has failed inspection. First, it was the cat. I replaced that. And now the last 2 years, it's been nothing but the three oxygen sensors, the wide band and the other two. And the mechanic is great because he's got this good snap-on scanning equipment. But he put in the last 2 weeks, we've had three different, he replaced them all. So that's 369 oxygen sensors, all of them. And the code still comes up, O2 sensor failure. And I got it upstairs, the sheet, but I forget exactly. It was a little more critical from New York State inspection. And I think it's the ECUM, and he does too, but because it's only got one computer, the ECUM. So I'm lost, and I can fix just about anything. But this one, it's got me famine. I don't know if you can help me out or not, but I appreciate it.
What do you got, Gordon?
Well, do you know what brand of O2 sensors your shop is using?
Dorman.
Okay. So Dorman doesn't make anything. They rebox, which is not a bad thing.
Exactly.
It's not a bad thing. Depends on what they're reboxing.
I
ran into this years ago on Jeeps, and we were putting oxygen sensors in them, and the same thing was happening with what you're experiencing. And I talked to the tech line, my tech line, and a guy at a Jeep dealership, and he said, I don't know what it is, but highly recommend using the factory sensors. And we started doing that. Okay. And if I put O2 sensors in, for example, a European car, I look to see who made the sensor, and I use the same brand and or an original. NGK is a big maker, NTK, which is owned by NGK, Bosch.
Right.
There's a bunch of them out there. I just recently started seeing in one of the auto parts stores offering General Motors boxed O2 sensors. I just put one in the other day, and it was a GM factory O2 sensor. So, again, I'm not bashing Dorman because they offer good stuff. But maybe your car is very sensitive to a knockoff O2 sensor, and that's why that's happening. I'd try a factory brand sensor.
Dan, thanks a lot. Only about a minute here. Patricia in Niskayuna, go ahead.
I have a 2018 Jeep Renegade, and I had messages. One of the messages changed oil. The second was check engine. And the car was taken to the garage by AAA, and I, as of 9 days ago, I'm still getting those messages.
Okay.
Is there a way I can find out if they actually changed the oil?
Well, if that vehicle has a dipstick, which I think it does, somebody could pull the stick, at least look at it and say, wow, this looks decent, or this looks like driveway sealer.
Right.
But without an oil analysis, you can't be sure.
So if it looks really sludgy, Patricia, then it probably hasn't been changed.
I would say it was changed, and I would say the shop had trouble resetting the maintenance reminder.
Oh.
Now, the oil change reminder is completely different from the check engine light.
Right.
Check engine light is an emissions-driven warning light, nothing to do with the servicing of the engine oil.
Well, what if it was the oil pressure light, though?
That would be a red warning, and it would say oil or have all a picture of an oil can.
I'm sorry, Patricia. We are out of time. Gordon Fricke, very quickly, Mary wrote in from Red Hook. Is it worth it to get the undercarriage of the car wash done while going through the car wash?
Absolutely. Yes.
Get that salt off
there. Get all that salt and grit out of there from this past winter.
Hey, man, we'll see you next month.
All right. Sounds great.
Support comes from Bittersweet Blackbird, Clifton Park, New York, a woman-owned and operated tattoo studio creating custom artistic designs tailored for each client. Appointments only. BittersweetBlackbird.com. At Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, helping to spring ahead with organic seeds. Seed starting supplies, flowering plants, herbs, and garden advice, WardsNursery.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. I have probably 20 emails we didn't get to today. So just remember, Gordon will be back next month, and we'll do it all again. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Ed Rosen screened the calls. Thank you, Ed. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. Darren Tracy will be here, and we'll see you, too.